Dearest me, welcome to a Life in Equinox podcast.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is time for podcast number 6. Awesome stuff. We got a lot on the menu for today. Granted, this isn't really a restaurant, but if it was, it'd be the most awesome restaurant ever. Okay, not really, but still, you get the gist, right? Please? Oh, well. All right, so what we got planned for today is I'm going to talk about the 1001 movie clubs we watched for this week. I'm going to talk about Primer, Hidden Blade, Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, and I have a little, conversational piece that I'm going to mention, and hopefully you guys can go from there. But it's going to be kind of different. I know I usually do the classics first, and then I work my way into it, but because of what I have planned for the ending, which isn't really any big, I don't have a big surprise or anything, don't worry, I'm just going to kind of flip the order a little bit and sort of talk about the more recent movies I watched this week. The other night, I actually got a chance to finally see Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, the Chanwook Park finale to his Vengeance trilogy, which was, if you don't know, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, then Old Boy, then Lady Vengeance. And this one's really intriguing because it's very different from the other ones. I mean, it's a lot less action violence and a lot more brutish violence, if you know what I mean, because it follows the tale of Guillaume Jolly, whose daughter is kidnapped by Mr. Bike kidnaps her daughter and says, "You have to go to jail for this kidnapping and murder I have committed, or I'll kill your daughter." And so she goes to jail for all these years, 13 in fact, for his crime, and in the meantime, he's sort of out roaming doing his, you know, kidnapping and murdering business, and so she spent 13 years planning her vengeance, and, you know, making friends and all that sort of stuff. And really, this was a very intriguing look at what happened to the people trying to get vengeance, because you deal with herself and the families of the guy's victims, and you see some, I mean, these are just, like, emotional, hit-you-in-the-gut moments. There's not a lot, you know, Old Boy had that really hard, like, especially the ending, but this time it's a lot more, I would say, character-based. It's a lot more personal, in a sense, it feels like, because you see sort of how vengeance can take its toll on people, and you see how it's a painful thing to experience, and I really just really was like, wow. Especially when the ending, the finale sequence, it just like Old Boy was a lot more of a holy crap ending. This is a lot more of a ooh, that hurts, you know, hit you in the gut emotional ending. And it was very well done. It was a little slow at times, I thought, because there's a lot of build up, a lot of character time. You sort of watch Guillaume Jolly, her sort of transition, her plan kind of unfolding, and how she deals with new and different circumstances, and it's very different, but it's an amazing character piece. I'd say that much for it, and it's a powerful, powerful vengeance story. I mean, just wow, powerful, you know. And it's kind of an odd transition, but the next movie I got to watch this week was the film The Hidden Blade, which is by Yoji Yamada, who's a Japanese director, and he's done like a million movies. If you've never seen him, he's very talented. And The Hidden Blade is the companion piece to The Twilight Samurai, which I've reviewed a couple months back, and I got to watch and I really enjoyed. And basically, it's the same story, you know, this samurai category. And what happens is there's this girl named Ki who, when she was 16, comes to live with his family so that she can learn, you know, how to be a good wife, pretty much. You know, she learns to cook and to clean and all that sort of stuff. And it was a really traditional thing back then for people from different caste families. And, well, he finds out that this girl, Ki, who has now gone on and gotten married and sort of fulfilled that societal obligation, if you will, she's been really tormented by her husband and new family, who doesn't want to pay for a doctor for her, so she's sick, and they leave her in a cold room in the corner of their shop. And he goes and he does something very untraditional at the time, and he goes and just takes her out of her husband's and family's house, which is, you know, very shied upon, and he nurses her back to health. And so, you know, he's a single guy with a married woman at his house, and there's a lot of controversy. And basically what at the crux of The Hidden Blade, though, is just like Twilight Samurai, it's samurais learning to deal with the transition from the samurai era to the weapon era. You know, they're throughout the series, Katagiri learns, you know, how to use guns, and there's a lot of sort of amusing side stories, like, you know, teaching samurai to march. They've never marched before, so they kind of do it, you know, the way they would always walk. You know, when they run, they hold their kimonos up, kind of like a skirt, and jog, and there's a lot of little, you know, laughs there, and it's an entertaining tale, but I struggled with the emotional connection to this one a little bit. The character Katagiri is a little bit more, I don't know, self-sustaining, and so his connection with Ki doesn't feel quite as good as it did as the companion piece in Twilight Samurai, which is really the same story. I mean, it just changed the names around. And Twilight Samurai is also a little bit more emotional, I think. The Hidden Blade just felt like it was trying to recreate the same emotional attachment, and it does on some level, but it's kind of weak. It's not nearly as... It's not as really as developed as it was in Twilight Samurai. And it may just be that I just like Twilight Samurai because it came out a couple years before, but 2004, 2002, not that big of a difference. Also, I like the actors in Twilight Samurai a little bit more, but that's besides the point. Hidden Blades, it's capable, and it does what it does effectively. If you watch this one first, you'd probably think higher of this one than you would of Twilight Samurai, I think. I think it's one of those things. It just depends on which one you watch first. I would recommend Hidden Blade, but I would recommend Twilight Samurai first. So, there is that. Next up on the movie watching list, I have Primer by Shane Carruth. And Primer was a movie that came back out in 2004. And basically what it's about is these two guys are trying to develop a machine that makes objects weigh less. And as a side effect of it, they accidentally create time travel. It's just a side of, it's an amusing thing because it's a side effect as opposed to, you know, they're not geniuses trying to create time travel. They just accidentally stumble upon it. And with that, you know, it's not perfectly unbreakable. You know, there's a lot of rules. Like, you have to enter the machine and you have to wait for a certain period of time while you're double, and confusing, to be honest. It's a very confusing movie. But I imagine it's one of those that if you watched it 5 or 6 times, you'd really start to get into it. The acting is independent, you know, $7,000 independent film quality. You know, and Shane Carruth pretty much plays every role. Well, he's, you know, the writer, the director, the actor, the producer, you know. He's capable, and so is the other actor whose name escapes me at the moment. And they do fine with it, but I kind of watched this movie and was like, if they had a little bit more money and time, I think they could have developed it better. Because I imagine if I really had time to sit down and, like, you know, really get into it, I could really break it down and love it a lot more. But since I don't have time to keep, you know, watch it 5 or 6 times. It, you know, it was okay, it was entertaining, it was good, and it was captivating in its own way. And, you know, it kind of always had that shroud of mystery. But I really just felt like I missed something, you know, when the ending came. And I feel kind of bad about that, because you don't want to miss something. I mean, people put a lot of money into these, and a lot of time into these. But I mean, it's very capable, and if you're looking for a good indie sci-fi film, I would recommend it. It's not, you know, you're getting what you pay for, and on some level, I find it hard to say that's a, you know, a overwhelming compliment, but it's a lot better than some of the movies that are made for, you know, 5 million times the amount that it was made for. So, if you're looking for it, I would recommend it. Not the best in the world, not the worst, perfectly fine and entertaining piece. And next up, we have the Directors Guild Association coming up. Woohoo, party time! Because I know when you think party, you think directors. Alright, well, their awards is coming out soon, and this is going to be, I think, one of the last real pushes before the Oscars. So, who wins this won't really have a front row seats, but probably going to be the last one to get any publicity. And the nominees are Catherine Bigelow, James Cameron, Lee Daniels, Quentin Tarantino, Jason Reitman. You've heard those names 6 million times by now. Do I even need to mention what movies they did it for? Okay, good. Well, let's see. This is actually a difficult one because, on some level, predicting it, I really want to go with Catherine Bigelow. I like The Hurt Locker. It's the favorite of all the movies that are being nominated. In my opinion, it's my favorite. I don't know what they think, but James Cameron, he's, you know, kind of the king of the directors in a sense right now. I mean, there's a lot of great directors out there, but for whatever reason, everything he's touched in the last 10 years, which is only two movies, has touched the gold, and so people were like, if we don't give it to James Cameron, what will the world think of us? Don't care what the world thinks of you. Just vote for what you think is the best. But that's a different argument. I'm going to say Kathryn Bigelow picks this because she's had a lot of sympathy. She's always been well-liked by directors. She's been around forever and always been at least solid, even though her movies have kind of up and downed. There's a lot to that, but, you know, I'm going to go with it. Kathryn Bigelow for the win. Suck on them apples, James Cameron, as Matt Damon would say if Matt Damon was here. Well, like I said, I have a little bit of a different format today, and so now I'm going to jump into the like real classics I got to see this week, which was for the 1001 Movie Club, which if you don't know what that is, you're killing me here. But basically what happened, and I've talked about this in the past, Common Sense Movie Reviews, Answer MVP, bought the book 1001 Movies to See Before You Die. He's got a group of us going and working together to watch as many of them. We watch about 4 a month. This month, our movies were Manhattan, Mulholland Drive, Last Picture Show, and Deliverance. Yeah, heavy stuff. I didn't get a chance to see Mulholland Drive. I'm kind of sad by that. But then again, I kind of feel like, you know, maybe I lucked out a little bit. Not really my kind of film. I'm not too much into the interpretational genre. But I do think it was nice to kind of see Manhattan, because it's from 1979, and it's, you know, the Woody Allen, another one of his relationship studies, kind of like Annie Hall. And it's got a lot of beautiful scenery, and it's kind of nice that it's done in black and white, because it almost kind of gives you that old-school homage vibe. You know, kind of like he's almost like trying to see it in the way that he saw it as a kid through movies. I don't know. I'm kind of romanticizing it, probably. But it was entertaining to an extent. I liked the characters, because I think they were just all kind of in their own little screwed-up world. And then at the same time, you had, I don't know, a nice little odd, I don't even know what it is. It's like a romance, like, it's like a love hexagon, maybe? I don't know. It's definitely not a love triangle. Because Woody Allen's character is dating a 17-year-old, but he falls for kind of like a critic kind of person, played by Diane Keaton, who's having an affair with his best friend, who's married. And so, I don't know, there's like, what, 5 people involved? So, it's a pentagon. Duh, missed by that much. But really, it was amusing. It has a couple great liners, especially the one with the orgasm conversation. You'd have to watch the movie. I'm not going to say the joke, and then you laugh, then you go watch the movie, and you're like, oh, well, I've heard that joke. It's not that funny. You know what I mean? Because you've already heard the joke. But, yeah, I mean, you go watch it. I would recommend it, at least. It was entertaining. I'm not sure if it's, you know, a movie you have to see before you die. If I never saw it in my life, I wouldn't feel as if I've missed something. There's a few good shots. It's an interesting kind of character jump around. But I don't feel like, you know, I'd rather watch Annie Hall. I thought that was a lot more entertaining and off the wall. And the other movie I got to see is The Last Picture Show, which is Peter Bogdanovich's, not to be confused with Rob Blagojevich. I don't know, their names aren't even similar, but they have extremely long last name B names, and that's where my mind goes, so shh. But Last Picture Show was kind of interesting, because the whole time I was watching it, I was like, this is boring, this is boring. Oh, well, that's interesting. This is boring. This is boring. Well, that's interesting. Oh, well, that's interesting. Oh, well, I see where he's going there. Interesting. And so I was really bored throughout the first hour, with a couple moments of like, oh, wow, that's nice, because I feel like the first hour spent so much time developing the characters. You kind of just sat there and nothing happened for long periods of time. Yes, we get it. You're driving around in circles and talking about nothing. Come on! And then the second hour came through, and I was really kind of captivated in all the how the story sort of played out and all the different things that happened, and I appreciated it a lot. And I really wanted to kind of get to know, because it's about Sonny and Dwayne, and they're sort of two high school seniors about to graduate, and I guess kind of life and love in a small town in Texas, you know, rather cliche storyline, but it handles it pretty well, I think, and it's a nice character study. I think it's boring mostly because it's showing you life that's boring. These people kind of have sex with each other because there's nothing else to do in the town. You know, it's either go to the movie theater, go to the bar, or have sex with each other. You know? So they kind of go with that. Overall, though, I see why critics like it. The, you know, slow developing character studies and that sort of stuff. But personally, I admired it, I think, more than I enjoyed it. And that's really kind of a difficult little spin, you know, because, and that's gonna lead me into my next discussion in a little bit here, but, you know, it's one of those movies that I was kind of, I liked all the technical aspects it did, I liked what it was showing and what it tried to do, and I really kind of admired it for that, but I didn't go, I wasn't like, oh my god, I have to see everything that's going on here, oh my god, wow, look at that, look at that, look at that, look at that, ah, it's amazing. I was more of just like, huh, well, oh, that's interesting, oh, that's interesting, oh, wow, I kind of like that, you know, it was kind of almost like an observational piece more than it was a sit down and, you know, have popcorn and watch a movie type of movie, but, you know, that's nothing bad with that, it's just, sometimes that's the way movies are, and I can appreciate that, and, you know, it's a fine line between whether or not, how you should look at entertaining movies. Now, the other movie is Deliverance, which I saw a few years back, and I kind of revisited. It's not a movie I enjoy watching twice. It's really disturbing. I'm not going to talk about it a lot here. I'll have my review up for tomorrow when we actually do it all, so you should look out for that. It's an intriguing tale. It's probably the more, I don't know, fast-moving of these, because a lot of these, this month's selections, I think were pretty slow and involving films. Deliverance is involving, but it's not slow, I wouldn't say. But I'll have that review up tomorrow. I'm going to go ahead and jump into my final discussion topic for this week, which is something I kind of wanted to talk about for a while. And it's something that I noticed a lot, especially with this past week, with the 1001 Movie Club, and over the past few months, is reviewing classics, or, well, movies considered classics versus recent films. Because I've noticed something, and I always ask myself this question is, am I like more lenient towards older movies? And I think on some level I am, especially when it comes to musicals, because for whatever reason with old school musicals, I just find its cliche so refreshing. You know, the cheesy one-liners and the horrible plot developments, I find them refreshing, as opposed to nowadays I just find them annoying. And I think on some level I respect it more in the time, because back then it was cliche, but it was kind of how it was done. I don't know how to express it really, but it sort of begs the question is, should we as reviewers be more lenient towards older movies than we are towards newer movies? I mean, I'm not saying by any means anyone who listens to my podcast is a movie reviewer and should respect and yada 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 give four stars to any movie just because it's a classic or whatever, but I mean, when I do my ratings, the score I apply to it is sort of just my gut personal feeling towards it, you know what I mean? I don't sit there and go, oh, well, this has to be, you know, X, Y, and Z, or else I can't handle it, or you know what I mean? I don't sit there and, you know, smoke a cigar and go, ha, yes. Well, this score obviously didn't have any Fellini and attach a -5, ha. I don't do anything stupid like that, you know, I just say, 7. You know, 8. You know, it's just like a gut reaction. And a lot of times, my gut reaction falls in the 7 range. Don't ask me why, it's just where my gut goes. Head in the gutter, gut in the film. That's my motto. Yeah, that's a horrible motto, isn't it? But it's interesting, because especially when it comes to Jimmy Stewart movies, I've noticed I'm exceptionally lenient towards plot developments. Like, if anyone's never seen this, Jimmy Stewart, one of his final, I don't know, quote-unquote performances, he plays, like, a legendary sheriff dog called Wiley Burp, ha ha ha, and it's really enjoyable, but, you know, he has a great final line in it. You know, he's like, one man's sunset is another man's dawn, and I'll read the quote here for you. Just remember, Fievel, One man's sunset is another man's dawn. I don't know what's out there beyond those hills, but if you're out yonder, heads up, eyes steady, heart open, I think one day you'll find you're the hero you've been looking for. And that's a really, 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 really cheesy line, you know? But it's got the Jimmy Stewart voice, and I love that voice so much. And then you have sort of this old-timey dog, and it's an amazing scene. You should, if you don't even like the movie, you should just watch that final scene, you know? But I really just enjoy the classics, and I wonder, though, if I'm allowing my enjoyment of the fact that they are classics to sometimes outweigh my personal feelings towards them as movies. I mean, I don't give movies a good score just because they're classic, but, like, Maltese Falcon, I really enjoyed, but I thought was a bit boring, and I didn't really care much about the plot and characters, and so I ended up giving it, I think, an 8. While a lot of people who are big movie buffs would be like, anything less than a 10, and you're a sacrilege to the universe, and that sort of stuff. And so, I wonder, how do you balance that? Because on some level, I think what separates a movie lover from a movie goer is that a movie lover admires and appreciates what the past has done for film. And on some level, maybe they derive a lot of pleasure from seeing what it's done for movie. I mean, I know when I watch Kurosawa's Hidden Fortress, I admire how that movie sort of influenced Star Wars, and I, you know, like to see that, you know, I love to see how old school movies have helped make newer movies, you know? I think it's intriguing, and on some level, I guess, I give higher scores because I derive pleasure from that, but I'm not sure if I should, you know, if I should give it a higher score because, I mean, it's not really a better movie, because it's influenced more movies I've loved. But it's not really a worse movie. And maybe there's some sort of fine line there. I'm not sure, but it's interesting, you know, to see how that sort of plays out. And I don't know. I wonder what you guys think about it. You know, write a comment on this blog post. Let me know. How do you feel about reviewing older movies? Do you just give them the score based on how you feel about them? Do you derive pleasure you think you don't derive from modern movies because there's that sort of historical aspect to them? Let me know. Write a comment. And that's going to wrap it up for this week's podcast. I kept this one rather short, under 25 minutes. Haha, victory to me. So, as you notice, I didn't do the whole opening thing, because I'm kind of assuming if you're even listening to these, you know a lot of the information. But if you don't, my name has been Univarn. My blog is A Life in Equinox. You can find it at Univarn, univarn.blogspot.com. You can comment there, you can say whatever you want, open mind, yell, laugh, cheer, doesn't matter to me. But no matter what, hopefully you enjoy yourself. It's been an exciting week. Got snow in North Carolina. I'm going to go play in it, and I'll see you all later. Bye.